Hello, Year 4. This is Chapter 8 of Stick of the Dump, continued. Don't know, replied Barney. Let's go on, just a little bit more, and maybe we'll see. There was a line of beech trees at the top of the little valley, and Barney felt there must be something the other side of them. He scrambled up the slope, went between the dark trunks, and beyond them was nothing. It was like flying. Smooth turf sloped down steeply under his feet, and far below the land was spread out like a map. Lou, he called, look where we are. They realised they were standing on the edge of the North Downs, a place they knew well enough, and the moon made everything clear as day. And yet, the more they looked, the stranger it was. There should have been pylons striding over the land carrying electric cables. There should have been squares of orchard, hop gardens, villages and churches. There should have been cement workers in the distance by the river, and where there was the tall television mast with a red light on the top. They could see nothing but forest and heath over the whole floor of the valley, and out of the night strange animal noises came up to them. And in all this stretch of empty land, there were only three points of light twinkling to show that man was somewhere about. The nearest light was only a little way along the side of the hills, and now they could hear human voices coming from it. It's a campfire, said Barney. Come on, let's go and see. But it might be savages or something, said Lou doubtfully. There aren't any savages in England. There aren't any stags in this part of England, but we just saw one. And this doesn't seem to be England at all. Well, it must be somewhere, said Barney. Let's go and ask those people. I think we ought to be careful, said Lou. Let's creep up through the woods and have a look. They went back into the shadow of the beech woods and made their way as quietly as they could over last year's crackling leaves and husks. Keep to heel, Dinah, whispered Lou. Barney, I wish I had a lead. Dinah might just give us away. I've got some string in my pocket, I think, said Barney. He rummaged in his pockets and found a coil of hairy string he had taken from a runner bean that seemed to have finished with. They tied it to Dinah's collar and went cautiously on. Soon the sounds of the camp were quite near, and they could see the red firelight flickering through the black beech trunks. Sounds as if they're having a party, said Lou. Listen, music. That's not music, said Barney. Well, it's jazz or something, or one of those skiffle groups. As they moved towards the firelight, keeping to the shadows, the noises were so loud that they did not have to worry about keeping themselves quiet. They reached the last beech tree of the wood, a giant with thick roots coiling into the chalky soil and broad boughs spreading out towards the slope on which the camp stood. What are you doing, Barney? Hissed Lou, as Barney started scrambling onto one of the spreading branches. I'm going to climb this tree so I can see. Well, so am I then. What about Dinah? You can't bring her up here. I'll tie her up, just here, said Lou. Lie down, Dinah, be quiet, that's a good dog. They climbed from limb to limb of the great beech tree until they got to a thick bough that grew out straight towards the firelight. Barney sat astride it and inched himself along until he reached a fork, far out over the bushes and brambles that straggled along the edge of the wood. They had a perfect view of the camp. Or was it a camp? There were beehive huts made of poles planted in the ground, tied together at the top and thatched with straw and rushes. In an open space, there was quite a crowd of people gathered around the fire. None of them seemed to be wearing much more than Lou and Barney. All of them seemed to have a lot of wild black hair, except for a few grey and white heads. The older ones were sitting, lying or squatting around. Toddlers were tumbling or sleeping in the dust. Boys and girls were chasing each other round the outside of the crowd or teasing fierce-looking dogs. The noise that was something like music came mostly from a group in the middle of the crowd near the fire. There were four figures in the group. One was holding half the jawbone of a large animal and running another longer bone up and down the teeth, making a scratchy rhythm. Another had a hollow log, which he was hitting with two wooden clubs. The third was a singer. He didn't seem to have much idea of the tune, and the children couldn't understand the words, but it was quite clear what the song was about. One moment, the singer was a deer, grazing peacefully and then looking anxiously about. Then he was a hunter, stalking his prey with spear poised. Then he was the deer, fleeing, the hunter throwing his spear, the deer falling, the hunter carrying it back to camp. The crowd became as excited as the singer and joined in with hand claps and cries. But there was yet another sound which the listeners could not quite understand, a kind of blum, 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 not always on one note, as most of the singing was, and not really taking much notice of the rhythm of the long log, drum and jawbone. It was as if someone who had never heard a tune was trying to play for the first time with the tea chest, string and broomstick. Then the bone scraper, in his excitement, joined the singer in a little shuffle dance, and the children could see the fourth member of the band. On the ground was a large, hollow animal skull with great curving horns. Tied between the horns were three or four lengths of string or gut, and a small dark figure was squatting by this simple harp, plucking at the strings, blum, 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 and taking very little notice of anyone else. In fact, the song came to an end. The drummer gave a final thump to his log. The bone scraper rattled to a stop. But the little harpist went on with his three notes as if he were the only musician in the world. Some of the crowd began to laugh and jeer at him as he played away. But it wasn't until someone threw a meat bone, catching him on the head with a clunk, the children could hear in their tree, that the player looked up as if surprised to see that he was not alone. Barney nearly fell off his branch. "It's Stig!" he almost shouted. "Hush, Barney!" Lou hissed. "You'll give us away!" "But it is Stig," said Barney excitedly. "I said he was clever. He probably invented that thing he was playing on. Where's he going now?" For the little figure Barney said was Stig was rather sulkily walking away from the campfire towards the trees. "He's coming this way," whispered Lou. "Barney, you're not to give us away." "Why not? He's my friend." "What about all the others? Who are they? You never said about them." "I don't know who they are. I never saw them before." "Well, we'd better be careful, Barney." "Oh, all right." But what gave them away was Dinah, tied up at the bottom of the tree. She had been quiet up to now, but when she heard Stig walking towards the wood, she began to growl and then to give short, sharp barks. On the edge of the bushes, Stig at once froze into stillness. Dinah went on barking, and some of the wild children playing on the outside of the crowd heard her too. The bolder ones ran to the edge of the wood. The little ones ran to their parents by the fire. Soon a number of alarmed elders, snatching up spears and clubs, were making for the woods and the sound of Dinah's bark. Lou and Barney clung to their high branch like squirrels, not daring to move. They could see the strange people on the edge of the wood, wondering at the unusual sound of a spaniel's bark. Then at last plucking up the courage to advance into the darkness of the bushes and the beech forest, holding their weapons at the ready. Dinah's bark became more and more frantic as she heard the rustling of bodies through the bushes all around and the crackling and the snapping of footsteps. Under cover of the noise, Barney whispered, "Lou, we've got to escape." "How can we?" breathed Lou. "Look where that bough goes." Barney pointed in the moonlight. The limb they were stuck on into nothingness. But one of its branches went across to another long limb, and this one stretched out and rubbed shoulders with another great beech tree. If they climbed over into the other tree, Barney thought they could escape. "We can go across there," he whispered. "Come on, while they're making all this noise." Lou's face seemed to go pale. "Oh, Barney, we can't. They'll find Dinah anyhow." "I'm going to try. Then perhaps we can rescue Dinah." He inched himself backwards along the limb they were sitting on until he reached the branch that grew crosswise. When he came to it, he wondered what to do. It was too thin to sit astride, so he decided to hang underneath it like a sloth by his hands and legs. Upside down like this, he crawled through the empty air between the two big limbs. By bending his head right back, he had an upside down view of the floor of the forest, patched with moonlight. And right beneath him was a wild hunter, the tip of his spear pointing skywards, but looking at the ground. Barney hung without moving until the man had passed on, then moved as quickly and as quietly as he could to where the branch passed over the other great limb. Here he got himself right way up on the bough again. His heart was thumping, his legs felt quivery, but at least he was safer for a little while. But now he had to go outward to where the two trees shook hands, high in the air. He worked his way forward. As he went, the boughs became thinner and swayed more. At last, he was where the trees met, where the branches crossed their movement in the wind had rubbed a great dry scar, and nothing he could do would stop a loud creak from coming from this rubbing place every time he moved. "I must get over onto the other tree," he thought. As quickly as he dared, he turned around so as to go backward down the new branch, let the branch he had just come up, and crack! It was a dead branch. Barney fell through nothing, then struck a flat leafy branch below, slid outwards from this one onto the lower one, crashed through, and fell to the last few feet onto the soft forest floor. And that is the end of chapter 8. I wonder what's going to happen to Barney next. Will he get caught, I wonder?